John McDonald and Cheryl McDonald versus the City of the Colony. Have we heard from Ms. Slayton? Okay. Mr. Vaila, if you'd come up here, and would you like to go forward with your argument?
I'm here, Judge. Yes, I would.
Okay.
Is there a chance of this being rescheduled or anything?
Well, actually,
I haven't heard anything from her office. I don't know.
The case was set for submission without argument today at 9 o'clock. Notice was given to counsel for both parties pursuant to the rules. It's now 10:55. If I got that right, 9:55. And counsel for the appellee has not appeared, nor has she called in. So based on that we're going to deem her request for argument to have been waived by non-appearance, and we'll let you go ahead and go forward with your argument if you'd like.
Sure.
Okay. How much time do you need for this?
Just maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay.
Just primarily, since I'm here, I'd like to take the opportunity to briefly go over the case and maybe answer any questions the court might have with regard to our position. May it please the court, my name is Ray Vella. I'm a lawyer with the firm Anderson, Burns & Vella in Dallas, and our firm represents the plaintiff and appellant in this case. Our brief has been filed in response to the court's order with regard to a plea to the jurisdiction. And at the trial court level, the plea to the jurisdiction, as it stands today, disposed of part of, but not all of, the case. So this is an interlocutory appeal as the case is on hold at the trial court level. There are a number of claims brought by my client. First and foremost are the negligence claims. And it is plaintiff's and appellant's position that plaintiffs provided adequate pleadings and evidence to the trial court to overcome the plea to the jurisdiction. Similar to the first case the court heard this morning, we have that same standard where pleaded the jurisdiction, the trial court looked at the pleadings, and the way that I can think of it, they almost have to look at the pleadings like a 12B6 motion in federal court. It's like plea of the jurisdiction in the jurisdictional case, they're saying it doesn't matter what they say, they can't make a case. They can't overcome this burden. And if by the pleadings and evidence presented, the plaintiff can show that they can meet that burden, then the trial court should overrule the plea to the jurisdiction. In this case, there have been pleadings with regard to some motorized pumps at a lift station. And it's our position that the motorized pumps at the lift station are, in fact, motor-driven equipment that provide for a waiver under the Texas Tort Claim Act. It's interesting in the record of the case that the trial court judge provided plaintiffs with what I feel was a nice statement in arguing their point when he said, it just seems to me that when the statute says motor-driven equipment, it means things that are propelled by the use of a motor, not things that sit still and have a motor driving some function that they perform. Well, the Texas Supreme Court has held differently. In the White case that we've cited in our case, the Supreme Court was looking at a case where the plaintiff made a claim that a piece of motor-driven equipment, in this case it was some sort of a motor-driven pump that was used to dissipate fumes that were collecting next to the plaintiff's land or store, was in fact motor-driven equipment under the statute. And in our case, it goes hand in hand with the holding in that case, that these pumps are in fact motor driven. The city has tried to claim that, well, those may be pumps and they may be motor driven, but that in that case, in the White case, the case was about non-use, because the Texas Supreme Court ultimately in that case ruled against the plaintiff, and the facts in that case were different than the facts here, because the defendant in the White case had brought these pumps out to perform this function to dissipate the contaminants that were accumulating, and then later remove the pump. The contaminants accumulated and then ignited and caused a fire. In this case, the record is very clear that the plaintiff has alleged continuous use of the pumps at issue that are causing a problem.
I have a question. Say we agree with you in that the pumps are motor-driven equipment. It looks like the statute, the Tort Claims Act, says that you have to plead property damage, personal injury, or death.
Right.
And which one of those have you pleaded?
Well, under the lift station pump injury, we've pled property damage and personal injury.
Okay. Then my question is, can an odor alone be property damage?
Yes, it can.
What's the authority for that?
I don't know that this is cited in my brief, but there is a Texas Supreme Court case. It's Science Spectrum versus Martinez at 941 Southwest 2nd, 910. And that case stands for the proposition. I actually use that for the premises defect argument, but I think it applies to this circumstance as well. But that case stands for the circumstance that under certain circumstances, an owner or occupier may be liable for an injury that occurs on property adjacent to the property owned or controlled because the owner or occupier has created a condition that affects the adjoining property. And in this case, the lift station and these pumps are actually located on a contiguous tract, and inside that tract of the lease premise is where the lift station is. And I think that the summary judgment or the evidence in this case clearly shows the court that. In fact, there's a map, a plat of the blueprint of the area that delineates where the facilities are and where it's located in connection to the property.
So you didn't plead personal injury or death in connection with
We did plead personal injury, yes.
Okay, and who were you saying was personally injured?
The personal injuries are health problems that were suffered by John McDonald and his son Patrick McDonald based on exposure to hydrogen sulfide gas that was being emitted from the lift station. There's evidence that there were several tests done with regard to the levels of hydrogen sulfide gas that were being emitted from the lift station, and that the tests revealed that they were far in excess of levels that are allowed
what
by the state.
What personal injuries did that cause?
He has respiratory problems. And again, this goes back to the argument that the folks in the first case were making. We have alleged these health problems, and this is a plea to the jurisdiction standard rather than a summary judgment standard. And, you know, in a summary judgment standard, if we were looking at those types of issues, I think that it would be appropriate to have our pulmonologist and our toxicologist say, yes, exposure to these types of things, this type of gas over time can cause the problems that this gentleman has suffered. But in the context of a plea to the jurisdiction, the question is, can you make that claim? And are there facts to show that? I think that you're looking at a different level of proof and a different level, a different hurdle.
I think
we're at the lower hurdle here. We just have to show that, gosh, if our facts are true, could we have a case? You know, and if we prevail here, that doesn't prevent a challenge from a summary judgment standpoint on those issues.
Was there a challenge by the city to your jurisdictional facts?
No.
Okay, and you, but you did rely on an expert report in some.
The expert report, it's not our expert report. It is an engineering report that was produced by the city in discovery. And the report states that the lift station is not operating under Texas TECQ guidelines. It's not operating at the level that's required by the state.
Did the city can challenge that, or?
I don't believe so. I mean, there was no evidence filed by the city in relation to the claim. I don't believe there was the city filed any affidavit or any kind of evidence that would go against our pleadings and the evidence we filed in the case. So again, our position is that, you know, as far as the personal injury and property damage, the lift station pumps fit squarely within the Texas Supreme Court's guidelines in the White case, and you know, by the judge, by his own comments in court, thought it had to have wheels and move, and we believe he got it wrong.
Okay, but you did allege that the damage or injury resulted from the use as opposed to the failure to use this pump.
That is correct. And the other point of that, but we've alleged that they misused these underground pumps that are pumping the sewage, and that those pumps have been continuously used since the onset of this gentleman's lease to the current time. There's a point in the city's brief where they say, well, there was a piece of equipment that was sitting on top of the lift station that was removed. That was part of it. And they say, well, they haven't made any allegations that the problem continued since that was removed. And that is not correct. Actually, the citation that they cite to says, you know, this equipment that was above ground was removed in October of 96, and these problems have continued throughout the year of 2007, and they continue to persist. The next waiver under the negligence category that we think applies is the injury to property. This was not addressed in the city's response, but in our brief, we think that there is a waiver under the motor-driven vehicle exception to the Texas Tort Claims Act, as the property at issue is a golf course, or it's a driving range and golf center, and the plaintiff presented evidence that the city, evidence and allegations that the city had used large trucks that had driven over the golfing course grounds and created large ruts and thereby damaged his property. There are photographs of the ruts on the golf greens, and we think that that allegation of negligence, use of a motor vehicle, again, overcomes that barrier to jurisdiction and allows the court to proceed on that grounds.
I have a question. Didn't the city own the property?
The city owned the property, and it was leased to Mr. McDonald. The copy of the lease is in the record on a long-term lease. It was originally leased to another party who then assigned the lease to someone, and then finally Mr. McDonald.
Does the lease give the city right of access across?
It does not. Well, the city, there's a driveway, a paved driveway, that leads from the road to the lift station and to the golf center parking lot. But the damage that is shown is in the record is damage to the actual golfing greens. So it would be, you know, like someone driving out to a putting green and making trenches in it. And we believe that that's damage. He had the right under the terms of the lease to possess it. And we think that he suffered an injury because of that. The next claim is nuisance. And generally, a nuisance is something that substantially interferes with the use and enjoyment of land, causing an unreasonable discomfort or annoyance by persons of ordinary sensibilities. And we think that, we think that we've pled our nuisance claim in such a way that it invokes Article 1, Section 17 of the Texas Constitution, and therefore immunity is waived. The facts before the court are that the situation at the golf course was such that this gentleman became aware. Over time, there were odors whenever he started. The odors became increasingly worse. Got to the point where he requested that the state come out and test it. When the state tested the odors, then he became aware that hydrogen sulfide was present at very high levels. That caused him to seek medical attention, and he was told by his medical providers that he should not return to the area. Obviously, it's not unreasonable for someone at that point to say it's not a good idea to operate a business where myself and my customers are going to be poisoned. And we think that the facts in this case are strong enough, certainly at this stage, this initial pleading stage, to show that the injury here is such and the allegations are such that they rise to a constitutional level of a taking. I see my time's up. I appreciate it. I would just ask the court that the court overrule the trial court's judgment that's before them, and I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for your appearance, Mr. Vela. We regret you didn't have more opposition today, but I'm sure you thank you. And the case is submitted, and we'll ask the clerk to recess until 10:30.